Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This podcast is made possible by our supporters over on Patreon. If you'd like to support the show and get your own RSS feed with ad-free shows and extra episodes every month, then head over to patreon.com/nerdcaveretro. And we are back for another episode of the Nerd Cave Retro Show. My name is Jason Robbins.
And I am Obi. No, I'm just kidding. This is Derek Doggett.
The best part of that trailer is when Obi-Wan's talking to Uncle Owen. He's like, when he's ready, he needs to be trained. And he's like, and Uncle Owen's like, what? Like you trained his father? I'm like, ooh, that burns. That hurts.
If there was a crowd behind Uncle Owen, they would have went, oh!
Is to get the gif of that one guy that's like, oh, and he like,
man, but yeah,
can somebody happy... make that somebody that's good at making gifs and videos, like have that part of the trailer and then just put in the picture, the gif of that guy that's like, oh, and like falls out of frame.
I'm sure it's somewhere on the internet already.
It's gotta be. Dude, I got goosebumps when that part happened in the trailer. I was like, oh, this is going to be good.
Yeah, we're going to get to see, because Owen didn't seem too bad in Attack of the Clones, and then you fast forward to A New Hope, and he's, you know, he's kind of a jerk.
Yeah, I think we're going to get some insight into why he does not like old Ben too much in this in the series.
And we see he already doesn't like him, so
yeah,
I'm sure we'll get to that. But yeah, happy May 4th to those who are Star Wars fans and celebrate this holiest of holy days, so...
I was wondering what we were going to get today. I figured Disney would have given... I was thinking we were going to get another Obi-Wan Kenobi trailer, which we did. But I was thinking they were going to release some more stuff, too, for the 4th today. But they didn't really... That was it. Just the Obi-Wan trailer.
Did you see that? I think I sent you and Wally the new poster that they put out with, like, the giant picture of Obi-Wan with Vader in the middle.
Yeah. So cool.
The Vader bits from that trailer... got me the most excited, because I've been wanting for quite some time now to see on screen, because it's been in multiple books, but how does Darth Vader get ready? Like when he gets out of his Bacta tank that he sleeps in, like he has to be put together.
I want to see that. Please show me that.
They showed glimpses of it. So I think we're going to get it. And plus, why bring Hayden Christensen back if you're not going to show him with his helmet off?
Yeah. I think we're. I saw some people poo pooing this new series.
Of course they did.
And I'm like, you are just. There's something sad within you, and I don't know what it is. And I'm sorry. I don't know who wronged you in your life that you would not want this in your life. But I've been waiting for this series since I first saw Star Wars when I was a kid, and I'm like, I want to know what happened with Obi-Wan Kenobi on the planet. Like, I want to know that entire 18-year span. I want to know what happened in that span.
Well, it's pretty well documented that no one hates Star Wars more than Star Wars fans.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised at all. But no, we were talking before we started. When Disney bought the rights to Star Wars, I said to myself, the one thing that I want is an Obi-Wan story that takes place in between episodes 3 and 4, because that's still an area that hasn't really been tapped in quite like it should. So I wonder if this is popular enough, if they'll do more with Obi-Wan.
I hope so, because I think Ewan McGregor, I think he loves the fact that he's Obi-Wan Kenobi, and he will play Obi-Wan Kenobi until he's dead. So let him play Obi-Wan as long as he wants. Just season, I mean, if you get 20 seasons out of him, do it. Just back that truck up of Disney money up to his front yard, just dump it and be like, just be Obi-Wan Kenobi from now on.
Exactly. I'm not going to lie, when we get to the moment when Vader and Obi-Wan essentially reunite, it's going to be emotional. Like, I'm probably going to scream.
you have to call me when you get to that scene and we got to talk each other through it. So
yeah, like, you're just not going to hear me say anything. You're just, you're going to answer the phone and you're going to hear, ah!
I'm kind of sad that we don't get that in a theater experience, because I feel like that's something that should have been a theater experience. But I mean, I'm glad to get it, but man, like, that's something I wanted to see on the big screen.
They should do that. Like, do a, I know it's a series, but do like an all day event where you show all the episodes in a theater.
Yeah.
Cause I'd do it.
I would go see that.
Yeah. But we've only got, was it 3 weeks?
Yep. 3 weeks.
Oh man.
21 days.
It's a great time to be a Star Wars fan. I personally think it is. Like, I know a lot of people are jaded with the new content, but I love The Mandalorian. I even liked Book of Boba Fett. It's not perfect, but I still liked it. And we're getting an Obi-Wan Kenobi series with Ewan McGregor and Hayden Christensen.
Like, what more could you ask for? Like, really?
Exactly. Yeah.
I've had my ups and downs with Star Wars myself. Not a fan of Rise of Skywalker. Was very disappointed in that movie. I liked The Last Jedi, even though a lot of people hated it. I don't think Disney did great with the sequel trilogy, but I think they're doing really good with the TV content.
Yeah, I don't want to dive too much into my gripes with the trilogy, but I think the biggest problem is that you can tell Disney did not have a huge plan, or like, at least with the prequels, you can tell it is a singular story that transcends three movies. You don't get that with the sequels. Like, yeah, you got Force Awakens, and that was a fun intro back into the universe, but they're kind of like, well, we'll kind of figure it out as we go. And with a trilogy like that, with expectations the way they're going to be, you can't do that.
I just wonder what would have happened if, instead of J.J. Abrams, if they would have given Force Awakens to Jon Favreau, or
Dave Filoni.
Dave Filoni. If they would have given it to one of those guys first.
Had they done that, I don't know if we would have gotten The Mandalorian, though.
True. But I think moving forward, they just need to leave those two guys and Bryce Dallas Howard, just those three. Just put those three in charge. Even if it's just, you know, Jon Favreau writing, Dave Filoni orchestrating everything, and Bryce Dallas Howard just directing everything. Just, if that's the hierarchy, I'm happy with that.
This may be too much to ask, but with the three of them, could you imagine how good a Darth Vader series would be?
Oh my God. Don't even tease me with that. You're going to give me a heart attack.
I'll have a heart attack if it happens.
Because of all the directors of the new Star Wars series, like, I feel like Bryce Dallas Howard is the one who has the best emotional content and personal drama. I think she just excels at that. So just let her just loose. Like, let her do, just leave them in charge. Like, Kathleen Kennedy, just just take a step back and just let them run everything. Just don't even bother anymore. Go do like ET2 or something. Just, I don't know. Just take a step back and let those three have it.
Well, I think that's what the misconception is, where everyone's like, oh, Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni should replace Kathleen Kennedy. But you realize if they do that, they're not going to be physically on set.
Yeah.
Handling really the creative, because they're going to have to be handling the business side of
things. See, that's the thing. She started meddling in the creative side when she should have just stayed in the producing side, where she shined for 30, 40 years, and then she got into the creative process, and that's where things started to fall apart. She's not to be in the creative part. She's supposed to be producer and then delegate to the people that know what they're doing.
Which there's nothing wrong with that, because it is a very important part of making movies and TV series happen.
Yeah.
And like you said, that's where she shines, and that has to be taken care of. So let her do that, and then let Favreau and Filoni run all the creative.
Yeah. And we've already gone, what, like 10, 12 minutes now talking about Star Wars, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine we're probably going to have some type of a Kenobi-centric episode when that show's done.
We have to. Like, I know we talk about it every time there's a Star Wars series. Like, we're going to do an episode talking about the series. But this one, we have to. I feel like this is going to be the one that they've learned everything that they need from doing The Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett, and they're not going to screw this up. They're not.
The expectations are going to be far too high.
I mean, Ewan McGregor is like, you got that dude back to play Obi-Wan Kenobi. Like, you can't screw this up. You just can't.
I feel like neither him or Hayden Christensen would have came back if they thought that it was going to suck.
Exactly. Like, Hayden Christensen was done, like, with Star Wars. Like, he left acting because, you know, he just couldn't find work after Revenge of the Sith. Like, that kind of ruined him. And I think he's due for a resurgence and people to give him the respect he deserved. Yes, he was not great in those movies, but I don't think, here's my thoughts on going back and watching those movies not too long ago. It's not his fault.
Natalie Portman.
Natalie Portman. It's not their fault. They just had bad dialogue. There's no actor in the world could pull off that dialogue. George Lucas is not a good dialogue writer.
I've said it for years. George Lucas is a good storyteller.
Yes.
But that does not make you a good writer.
Exactly. That's why Empire was so good, because he gave it off to somebody who knew how to write dialogue.
Yeah. No, exactly. Like, George Lucas is one that you want him in the room bouncing ideas off of him, but you don't want him putting, you know, pen to paper and writing out your screenplay.
You could tell those three movies, those prequels, each one of those were a first draft. I will bet any amount of money right now there was no rewrite on any of that. It was, he spent a weekend writing those movies and that was it. He was like, I'm not going back. Like, it's perfect the way it is. And like, George might want to take another pass or two on that.
That's the thing with Uncle George. You gotta put a leash on him and just kind of pull him back. Like, no, it's not going to work, buddy.
If Steven Spielberg would have been there, he would have made him do another pass or two. But
and then another.
And then another.
And then another. And then maybe they would have been ready.
I think if they would have had better dialogue, if there would have been better direction, because I don't think George Lucas is a great director either. Like, he's a great storyteller.
Not.
That's what he does. He comes up with these fantastic stories, but he's not a good director. And if they would have had a better director and better dialogue, those movies would have been just way more loved than they are.
Yeah, I think so too. And I'll say this, I mentioned it, you know, when comparing it to the sequel trilogy, at least it tells a coherent story.
Yeah. That's my biggest problem with the sequel trilogy is, okay, Force Awakens, pretty damn good. They came back. They basically just gave us Star Wars over again, and that's what we asked for. Okay, awesome. And then Rian Johnson dared to tell a different story going in a different direction. I'm like, okay, let's see where this goes. And then they didn't trust him enough to see where he was going with it. They gave it back to J.J. Abrams, who said, I don't know what to do with this. Like, we got, I don't know. And he just... I don't know. They didn't let him do. J.J. Abrams is a good starter. He's not a good finisher.
He's not great at endings.
Yeah. Great at.
Well, I blame part of that there. On the fan base, though.
Yes. Yeah. I agree. Because they hated on Last Jedi so much. If they would have just had more trust in Rian Johnson, I think the third movie would have been what we wanted.
Because I'll say this real quick. If for those who still hate on Rian Johnson and think he's a terrible filmmaker, go watch Knives Out.
You know, I still haven't watched that, and I was going to watch it last weekend, and I didn't get a chance to, but I will watch that this weekend.
I think you'll love it.
I know I'm going to love it. Everybody I know that loves movies loves that movie, and I trust their judgment. So
it was my favorite movie of the year that it came out.
Yeah, and I need to watch it before the sequel comes out.
I can't wait for that, too. That's one of my most anticipated movies of the year.
All right. Well, that's our May the 4th Be With You section for the show today. You ready to move into the news?
Sure.
Here we go. Of course, all of today's stories were submitted to us by Armez Jackson and I Am the Rampage. And if you have a story you'd like us to cover, please send them to nerdcaveretro@gmail.com. Up first, we have from movieweb.com, Sonic the Hedgehog cartoon series returns with a fan-funded third season. 90s fans of Sonic are jumping for joy over the newly released trailer that continues where the canceled cartoon left off. The famous video game mascot has slowly been climbing his way from being a source of mockery to a well-respected franchise and savior of video game movies. While fans of the Hedgehog are busy running the theaters, there's been another dedicated group that's been hard at work giving another piece of Sony history the love it deserves. The group goes by the name Team Season, and the A is a 3, and their mission is to give the beloved Sonic cartoon from the 90s, a third season 28 years after it was canceled. Trailer for the upcoming season can be viewed on YouTube. And if you're a fan since the 90s, it's probably a blast from the past. So what do you think about Sonic getting a season 3 there, Derek? I know you were a big fan of this cartoon back in the day.
Yep, watched it every Saturday morning that it came on. I mentioned this before, but there were two Sonic series that came out around this time. There was Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog, which was marketed towards small children, had very like slapstick type of corny humor. And then you had this series, which was called just Sonic the Hedgehog, or commonly referred to as Sat AM, mm-hmm. S-A-T AM for Saturday mornings. Had a little bit of a darker and more mature feel, and honestly had some really good storytelling, especially towards the end of its run. This was one of the ones
that we did a commentary track for, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yes. It had more of an anime feel to it.
You're thinking of Sonic X.
Oh, that's the one that was it.
That one pretty much is an anime. This was made in America.
We did this one as well. We did two. Yep. Two. Yep. I remember.
Yep. Yep. So introduce new characters that, and I can never remember if this inspired the comic book or the comic book inspired the show, but they were kind of joined together. They had the same characters, same feel and everything. Show ended, I remember, on a very big cliffhanger with the apparent demise of Robotnik, and it was canceled mostly because of a little known show at the time called the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Oh yeah.
So the cool thing is, so when this came out on DVD years later, they did an interview with one of the writers, and he actually gave a kind of overview of what was going to happen with the third season before it was ultimately canceled. Unfortunately, that writer died a few years after the DVDs were released, but supposedly they're taking inspiration from the ideas, and the trailer actually looks really cool. Like the animation style, it looks a little more modern, but the way the characters are drawn look pretty much identical to how they were in the show. So I definitely want to see more, because this is something that I never thought would happen.
It doesn't say in here. I was looking throughout the article. It's a pretty lengthy article, but they don't say how many episodes it's going to be.
Yeah, I didn't see either. I mean, if it's 13, 26, however much it is.
Yeah, I figured
I'm definitely
going to
watch it.
They'll probably do like 12 episodes or something like that.
Yeah. And it says here that it has visuals that emulate the look and feel of the original show, to Sally and Snively's new voices sounding identical to their original actors. They even brought back Johnny Gioli of Crush 40, who sang the opening original to the cartoon. And that band has done a lot of the vocal tracks for the more modern Sonic games as well. So
that's cool.
It looks great. I can't wait to see more. Like I said, I thought this was something that, you know, may have been continued in, say, like a comic book form. Mm-hmm. But I'm happy that a team is actually putting this together, because this is really cool. And how popular is Sonic now? Like, you got the movie, you got this series, you've got the Netflix animated series that's coming out.
All we need is a new video game. Hint, hint, Sega.
And to be honest, I don't know how good Frontiers is going to be, but I'll save that discussion for another time.
Yeah, we'll save that one.
Yeah. This comes to us from our favorite site, NintendoLife.com. Dungeons of Dreadrock, a neat puzzle crawler with Zelda Minish Cap style. Dungeons of Dreadrock is a simple little game centering around the efforts of an adventurous girl to save her brother from sacrificing himself in a haunted dungeon. He's been taken down 100 floors, crawling with goblins, spiders, traps, and other awful things. And you'll need to overcome it all if you wish to save him. Narrative is kept to a minimum here, but brief vignettes that play out every few floors when you nap by a bonfire to help give you a sense of the world and why your brother felt the need to sacrifice himself. Gameplay has been compared to a dungeon crawler, but this is really a puzzle game with swords and sorcery set dressing. And you can look at several screen caps on the article, and it does very much have a, I call it the cel-shaded Zelda look that you saw in the Wind Waker and the Minish Cap and a couple of other games as well. It looks pretty fun. I think it looks great. I normally don't play a ton of these type of games, but
I love a good dungeon crawler, and this looks like it's right up like my alley. Like, I really want to play this. This game looks gorgeous. I love the way the layout is. It has that Zelda top-down look, but it's way more, you know, like I said, it's like that cel-shaded look. And it's more like cartoonish cel-shaded look, and it just looks wonderful.
And you can also download the game for free on smart devices, and you can purchase an ad-free version for just $2.49. But it is coming out for the Switch, which I think would probably be the better option.
Yeah, I'm not playing this on my phone.
I could play games like Solitaire and games like that on my phone, but a game like this, I gotta have a console.
Yeah, I don't have a single game on my phone.
I have Solitaire and Wheel of Fortune.
I was thinking about getting Scrabble, but I don't know. I'm still thinking about it.
Yeah, I could see that being a good phone game.
From joystickersbrazil.blogspot.com, Superliminal is getting a physical release on Nintendo Switch May 5th. Super Rare Games and Pillow Castle today revealed plans for the physical release of Superliminal, first-person puzzle game with three different boxed versions. There's a standard edition that's limited to 3,000, which is $36.36. It comes with the game with cartridge, interior art, full-color manual, and exclusive sticker. There's the Steelbook edition for $52, limited to $750. It comes with exclusive Steelbook, the cartridge, postcard, interior art, full color manual, sticker, and 3-card trading pack. And here you got the collector's edition, limited to, what does that say, 1,250?
Yeah.
Or is it 250?
It looks like 1,250.
Yeah, for $97.18. Comes with everything before, a 32-page hardback miniature museum guidebook, Superliminal pawn chess piece, three apple dice, and an optical illusion fridge magnet, all in a collector's edition box with a lenticular lid. Let's see. I am not familiar with this game. This was sent to us by Armez Jackson. I just thought it looked really cool because it's got a weird, almost like it looks like the Everlook Hotel, but with weird, like, I don't know. Like, it's got an ominous look to it, and I don't know anything about this game.
My instant thought was it looked like if someone cleaned up the hotel from The Shining.
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying, the Everlook Hotel.
Yeah, this would be it. I always forget the name of that hotel. But yeah, that's kind of what it reminds me of. It looks pretty interesting, and the collector set looks really cool. I mean, it's got, I like physical little trinkets like the chess pawn piece and the dice. It looks really cool. I don't know if I'll play the game or not, but the actual set, like if you're a fan of it, I think it would be worth getting.
Yeah, I think, like you said, if you're a fan, this is probably worth getting. But as far as we go, I don't think either of us have played this before.
Mm-mm. No, I've never actually even heard of it until just now.
Yeah.
Let's see. Our last story comes to us once again from NintendoLife.com. Kickstarter DIY kit transforms Game Boy Advance into console-like HDMI system. This actually looks really cool. A new Kickstarter campaign by Intech Gaming aims to convert the Game Boy Advance into a console-like experience. Its GBA HDMI kit has so far raised just over 10 grand with a goal of $49,697 and promises to be a highly portable, easy to operate, and a fun DIY device. It also comes with a built-in Bluetooth receiver, allowing it to support all kinds of game pads, including PS4, PS5, Switch Pro, and Xbox One. Retro gaming mod YouTube channel Macho Nacho Productions was sent a kit and has uploaded an entire breakdown showing the unboxing, installation, etc., which you can watch that on the article itself. This looks really freaking cool.
So basically what this is just you have your Game Boy Advance, you plug it into this thing, and then you plug it into the TV and makes it HDMI?
Correct.
That's pretty cool. I wish they would do this, one of these, for like the original Nintendo, the Super Nintendo, anything pre-HDMI. I wish they would make a device like this.
I'd love to be able to play Metroid Fusion on a TV. That'd
be just something. And I know there's ways to do it. I know there's ways to mod the NES to make it HDMI, but I am not a modder. I don't have time to sit down and solder 85 different things together to make this work. Just give me a little box to plug the Nintendo into, plug it into my, you know, modern television, and boom, I'm off and running. That's what I need.
I'm right there with you. I've never really tried my hand at modding anything because I've been too afraid that I would just screw up the console and then have to ultimately go get a new one anyway. So I leave that to those that have much steadier hands than I do.
Yeah.
But this sounds really cool. Like I would love to be able to play games, like I said, Metroid Fusion, some of the Mario ports and other great Game Boy Advance games on an actual TV.
Yeah, it looks really cool. I hope this does fund so that they maybe will do something like that where you take your older consoles, just have to something very simple to plug into that transforms it into HDMI.
Let's see what they have 29 days to go as of when we're talking about this, and they're up to $27,500.
Oh, they've got plenty of time.
Yeah. With 171 backers.
That's not bad.
So this will make it.
Oh yeah, I got for sure faith that this will go through.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now we're going to go into this month in video game history. Let's see, May 22nd of 1980, Namco releases Pac-Man. Becomes the highest grossing game of all time. It has the first gaming mascot character, established the maze chase genre, that's hard to say, opened gaming to female audiences, introduced power-ups, and told a story through cutscenes. I love Pac-Man, but I think I'm more of a Miss Pac-Man guy myself.
I would agree with that. Miss Pac-Man, both are fun games, and Pac-Man is very important to the history of video games, but Miss Pac-Man's just a little bit better. And the thing I remember the most from this game of playing it as a kid were the cutscenes. Like I would want to hurry and get through the level so I could see what happened next. So, I mean, when you think of video games, Pac-Man's like top three, top five most iconic video game character of all time.
The only thing that now playing, going back and playing Pac-Man now is it's the same maze over and over again. And once you got to Miss Pac-Man, you know, you had differentiation in the mazes as you went through the game.
Yeah.
And it's a faster game as well, Miss Pac-Man is. Mm-hmm. Rampage in the chat room says, Metroid Fusion will be the one game to get him to play a Switch again.
I mean, it's that good.
Yeah.
I have sung the praises of that game immensely. It makes me actually want to go back and play it again. Let's see. May 5th of 1984, Atari releases Star Wars, a color vector graphics game based on the popular film franchise. I've never played the Atari version of Star Wars, but I want to.
Let's see. I don't remember. I don't know if they ever released this certain version of Star Wars. This is the actual arcade game.
Oh, the arcade cabinet.
And the arcade cabinet is great. It still is worth playing today. Like, I would love to have an arcade one-up version of the Star Wars arcade game, because I think the only Star Wars games they put out for the Atari were a lightsaber.
It says here
game.
It was released for the Atari 2600 and the 5200.
Was it? I didn't have it. I had Empire Strikes Back for the Atari 2600. I don't remember this game being released for the Atari.
This would be, if I could have, let's say, three arcade cabinets in my house, this would be one of them.
Yeah,
just because, it would be a fun game to play, but also looks really cool.
This, Tron, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles would be my picks.
That's tough to argue. I mean, Star Wars and TMNT for sure. My third one would probably be Tron, or my dark horse would be The Simpsons.
Oh, yeah, The Simpsons.
I love the Simpsons arcade game.
Why did they never put The Simpsons out as a home port? It's mind-boggling.
I don't know, but it's a travesty.
I know. Like, that game was so good.
I won't get too much into it, but it's a really good game.
Missed opportunity. See, May 12th of 1989, Konami releases Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for the NES in Japan. One of the first video games based on the 1987 animated series being released after the show's second season. I'm still going to say it. I love this game. It was tough, and I kind of hated it as a kid, but as an adult, I really like the original Ninja Turtles game for the Nintendo.
Well, I think it's tough to compare it to the arcade game, because the arcade game is so iconic and beloved.
But now I think, actually, I don't want to say that for the actual arcade game, Ninja Turtles, but I think the original Ninja Turtles NES game is better than Ninja Turtles arcade game for the NES. It's just a better game.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The arcade game is better played
in the arcade.
In the arcade. So, and I'll say this also, and we've mentioned this numerous times when we've talked about the Turtles. People who are younger than us that missed out on that generation had no idea how popular the Ninja Turtles were at the time. Like, you couldn't go anywhere without seeing something Turtles related, especially when the movie came out. The 90s was when the cartoon really hit its stride. You had these video games. They were everywhere.
I can still remember walking into the arcade. And they would, of course, like that being the, they would always put the new machines up front. So as soon as you, like, you're walking down the mall and you get closer and closer to the arcade, you hear that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, and you're like, oh, it's here, they have it. And then you run into the arcade and there's like 20 people gathered around, and you're like, damn it, I'm not going to get to play today.
I was about to say, every arcade you'd go to, you'd know which was the most popular game.
Yeah.
Or where the Turtles game was, because that's where the line was.
Yeah, they would always have the nice, big, new, shiny games like X-Men or The Simpsons or Ninja Turtles way up front. And then all the lonely, old, broken-down Galagas are in the back. Nobody's playing. Sticks
Rampage,
are broken.
Rampage says we need to do a four-player Turtles in Time when the Cowabunga Collection comes out. Absolutely.
I'm down for that.
That's going to be a day one purchase for me. Like that, yes. It's going to be so worth it.
On
I cannot wait for that
PlayStation or
out.
Switch or where are we doing this at? Because I need to know what to buy it for. I have PS4.
Yeah, yeah, same. Like if everyone wants to get it for the PlayStation, I'll get it for the PlayStation.
I'm whatever you guys want. That's where I'll get it.
Yeah. May 11th through the 13th of 1995, the first annual Electronic Entertainment Expo, also known as E3, is held in Los Angeles, California. People who grew up in the 90s, like you knew the one event to look forward to for video games every year was E3. That was where all the big announcements were made. What is your favorite memory of an E3 announcement? Do you know off the top of your head?
Not right off the top of my head. I think probably.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I mean, I'm not really going back that far, but I mean, when Xbox unveiled the 360... was really good, you know, when trying to think back to the 90s, and I don't remember too many back then, like that far back.
My most memorable that I can think of is it's a two-parter. It was when Nintendo was showing off the capabilities of what would become the GameCube, and they had the realistic looking Zelda demo with Link fighting Ganondorf. We didn't hear anything about it for a couple of years. And then they unveiled what would become Wind Waker. And there was just such an uproar. Like Zelda fans were so pissed. One of my good friends in high school, whenever that announcement was made, we would always meet each other in the hallway. And he lost his mind over it. Like he said, this game is going to be terrible. And then, sorry to say it, Mike Evelyn, because I know you're going to be listening, I thoroughly enjoy Wind Waker.
I love Wind Waker, too. I don't know why he hates that game. That's just sad.
Well, his claim is valid about finding the Triforce pieces. Like, it does get a little repetitive, and I would have liked to have seen maybe, like, another dungeon or two. But I'd still put it over, like, I enjoy it more in the Twilight Princess. Twilight Princess was a bore.
Yeah,
I don't remember much of anything from that game.
I think I got maybe 5 hours into that game, and I was like, I'm done. This is kind of boring.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a nice-looking game, but that's really about it. Like, yeah. And playing as Wolf Link is kind of cool, but...
I don't even think I got that far.
like story-wise, it just didn't do anything for me, but...
And Rampage says there's talk that the Ninja Turtles game will be cross-platform, but hasn't read anything officially. Yeah, I haven't seen anything official about that either, but that would make sense if they really want to just sell the hell out of that game.
It would be the smart thing to do. I want to keep track of how much that collection sells.
Yeah, we will. We'll give the numbers here on the show.
Yeah.
Let's see. Second to last, in May 1999, Nintendo has started working on what will eventually be the GameCube under the code name Project Dolphin. I remember this.
And then they actually use that term in the Pikmin franchise, because that's the name of Captain Olimar's ship, is the Dolphin.
I think they revealed that at E3 when they called it the Dolphin. And everybody was like, the Dolphin? What?
Echo the Dolphin is going to be its new its new mascot. Move over, Mario. Like, Mario, you're done. Link, see ya.
Here comes
Echo the Dolphin. Echo That's the, where it's at.
Echo the Dolphin, the new Nintendo mascot.
That or I guess they could have worked out something with the Miami Dolphins if they wanted to get into that realm. I always think of the first Ace Ventura when I think of the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah. I wonder why Nintendo always changes their official names before things come out. Like, you know, they had the Ultra 64 eventually became the Nintendo 64. Project Dolphin became the GameCube. What was the Wii called before it came out?
Let me look it up.
Yeah, because it was, I know it was way cooler than Wii. I don't remember. I can't, not right off the top of my head. I can't remember.
I think it's, oh, it's the Revolution.
Yeah, the Nintendo Revolution. That's a cool name for a console.
Join the Revolution.
Yeah. And then they're like, they bring it out. It's like, Wii. It's the Wii. The Wii Wii.
But the Wii was a fun system, though.
It was, but they should have just kept Revolution.
I was going to ask you this when putting this video game history together. I was curious to get your thoughts. Where would you put the GameCube like on your list of best Nintendo consoles?
Well, of course, I'm going to say the best console they ever made was the Super Nintendo, because that thing was just awesome. Number two is the NES. I would probably say the GameCube. I mean, I love the Switch, don't get me wrong, but man, the GameCube just had some great stuff on it. So I'd probably put it at number three, because the GameCube was just good. It just came out against the original Xbox and PlayStation 2, and it just, I don't know, kind of got beat down.
Well, I think a lot of people were looking at Nintendo as still being like a kid console, and those who played the NES and Super NES were all adults now. So they were looking at, you know, PlayStation, and then it didn't help that Halo came out along with the Xbox, and that, you know, changed the multiplayer genre forever.
Staff Sergeant Sketch says Wii U is number one. You are banned, sir.
If we were doing worse consoles, then it would be number one. I think I agree with you. I think I would put Super Nintendo number one, just because it had so many, like, the list of great games for that console is endless. The NES, because it laid the foundation, it still has some of the iconic games like Mario Brothers 3, the original Legend of Zelda, Metroid. I would put it above the N64 because I think the look of the games, like, they've aged much more nicely.
Yeah.
And they also play better than the N64.
The N64 just, it's not dead last. Like, I definitely put the N64 like above the Wii. Even though the Wii is a great console, it just wasn't a whole lot on there that I really was crazy about. And I had a lot of fun playing the N64 back in the late 90s, but that thing did not age well. For me personally, it just did not age well. I don't enjoy going back and playing a lot of those games.
Did you see the video of, I forgot who did it, but they remastered a section of Ocarina of Time with the new Unreal Engine?
Yes.
Man, if they release that game, that, see, why you would not hear from me for a long time.
Why doesn't Nintendo go hire those people?
They'll send them a cease and desist.
They'll send them a cease and desist.
We'll talk about that next week.
Take them to court, but they, instead of just saying, hey guys, how about we make your little studio a part of our giant corporation and give them a shit ton of money and let them do what they do?
And you're doing a great job with this remake of Ocarina of Time. We're going to let you guys finish it. Here's all the assets. Make it happen.
Staff Sergeant Sketch, you are 100% correct that going back and trying to use the N64 controller is almost torture. For me, it is, because my right thumb wants to control the camera and there's no camera to control. It's like, I don't know. It's just, I can't go backwards for that controller.
I'm going to make a confession. When I played Glover to review it, I used a ROM because I didn't want to use the controller.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you at all.
I'm like, I could get this game for really cheap, but then I'm like, I really don't want to use this controller. Yeah. It's like if I go back and play Ocarina of Time, I play it on the 3DS.
Yeah.
Same thing with Majora's Mask. But I digress. Last section of this month in video game history, May 22nd of 2000, Rare releases Perfect Dark for the Nintendo 64. You want to talk about, we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, properties that would make for a good movie. Perfect Dark would make a great movie.
Yeah, I think you're right on the money with that. I don't know why that Nintendo didn't continue Perfect Dark as a series.
It was continued after Microsoft acquired Rare. They released a prequel called Perfect Dark Zero, but I don't think it was held as in high of a regard. I never played it, so I couldn't tell you how good or bad it was. But it just, we live in an age now where people love, you know, strong female characters, and I think Joanna Dark would make an awesome, like, franchise figurehead.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't know why they kind of just let that one just die.
And I know James Bond's around, but Mission Impossible is going to be ending in a couple of movies, so why not continue that genre?
Yeah,
with, you know, with Perfect Dark, and it'd be great.
But right now, before we go into our review for tonight, Derek has some shout-outs.
Yes, as always, we'd like to shout-out our awesome patrons over at patreon.com/nerdcaveretro. We want to shout-out Daniel Salmon, Tyler Watson, AxeBlade07, Armez Jackson, Hand Solo, Carlos Longoria, Staff Sergeant Sketch, Gus and Penny, Matthew Salmon, Mike Eveland, and Mr. Brandon Rutledge. Thank you all so much for your continued contributions to the show. And if you want to be a part of our awesome Patreon community, you get early access to our fun commentary tracks. Like, I know you and Wally just did an episode of Ewoks.
Yes, we did. And you'd be happy that you missed that one.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure if you mentioned it or not. I had a family emergency over the weekend. So I was not able to make the commentary track, but it got me curious to go back and watch, because I've actually never watched Ewoks.
I said it during the commentary that I don't remember anything from this cartoon from watching it as a kid, and I didn't know if that was a good or bad thing. And then I realized while watching it, it's because it's boring as hell. Like, there's nothing. Me or Wally, it did not keep our attention. Like, we were talking about everything else under the sun except for that cartoon.
But those usually do make for the best commentary tracks, though.
Yeah, they do. But at the same time, it's like it didn't have anything to do with the cartoon.
Yeah. So if you want early access to fun episodes like that, just head over to patreon.com/nerdcaveretro. And for new patrons, be sure to send us your social media, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, email, Instagram, so we can give you a proper shout out.
And don't forget, if you are a patron, it's that time again to go check your subscription with Patreon, because sometimes they have a little trouble getting to go through with your bank. So if you notice your payment didn't go through this month, please go check on Patreon and make sure all your banking stuff is kosher. And now are you a coffee lover? Do you sometimes need that little extra boost for some all-night gaming sessions? Well, you should head over to brescoffeeco.com. They have so many different flavors of coffee, doesn't matter what type of coffee you like, they got you covered. Try the Good for Gaming roast, or the Two Hearties One Ship, which is a rum and dark chocolate flavored roast. Not to mention, they keep their seasonal flavors all year long, like the Fall Spice or the Sweet Tooth. They can even add flavors to your coffee. So whatever you need, head over to brescoffeeco.com and use the code NCR for 10% off of your order. This is what we're going to be talking about tonight. Wizards and Warriors is a platform video game developed by Rare for the Nintendo Entertainment System. It was published by Acclaim and released in North America in December 1987 and in Europe on January 7th, 1990. In the game, the player controls Kuros, Knight Warrior of the Books of Excalibur, as he sets out in the kingdom of Elrond to defeat the evil wizard Malkai. Malkai holds the Princess of Elrond captive in Castle Ironspire, deep within the Forest of Elrond. The player fights through forests, tunnels, caves, while also collecting keys, treasure, weapons, and magic items. And the biggest surprise of doing this game, because I've been thinking about doing this game for a while now. I actually picked up a copy of it at a flea market a while back. I did not know that this game was developed by Rare. I had no idea.
I'll be perfectly honest. I have not heard of this game until you told me you were going to review it. And I was even more shocked when you said that Rare developed it.
And it's crazy because this game, I was not into this game when I was a kid. I remember playing it a couple of times. I had some friends that had this game, but it was just, something about it didn't capture my attention. But now as an adult playing it, I got a lot more out of it. And this is a very well made and executed game. I think when I was a kid, there's a lot of things about this game during the gameplay. It kind of throws what you know about platformers and side scrollers and kind of just throws it out the window. And at the time I was used to things like Castlevania, Super Mario Brothers, that type of stuff. And that stuff doesn't really apply here to this game. Like, this game plays really well, don't get me wrong, but you have a sword, and sometimes it even as an adult a little bit playing it, it feels like you don't have much of a range as far as attacks and things like that, but you can hit things as you jump. Like, you don't take as much damage as you think you are during this game. And the cool thing about it is, even though if you do die, and thank you, Rare, for doing this in the game, you get unlimited continues, and you pretty much just start right back where you died. So you can pretty much finish this game in one sitting, because you're not punished in any way by dying.
I feel like, and I don't mean to use the pun here, but I feel like that was actually very rare for games back then, because it's like, we talk about the Nintendo level of hard where, like, if you die, you got to go all the way back to the beginning.
Yeah.
So, or just go so far back that you might as well just start from the very beginning. That's actually very surprising, because I in looking at this game, and I don't know a ton about it, but I just assume that you die and you just have to start all over again like others.
Yeah. And the cool thing about this game is it's not a straight platformer side scroll or anything like that. There's a lot of jumping, climbing, it's got different sort of aesthetic to each level. Like, the very first level is the trunk of a tree, like where you're going in and out of the trunk of the tree, trying to get to the top. You get to the top. And of course, through the whole thing, you have to collect gems. You have to get keys to open up the treasure chest throughout the level. Killing enemies gets you, power-ups, different potions, things like that, that do different things, like invincibility, stuff like that. You also get, upgrades to your armor. Like, you get boots of, I forgot what the names of it are, like the boots of floating or whatever, where you can, like, or boots of levitation, which you get, and you can levitate for like 3 or 4 seconds, which helps you kind of like almost use it like a double jump. Like, you can get to higher places that you can't quite jump to. Like, you do the levitation and you kind of go up a little bit, and once you reach the top of that levitation, you hit the jump button, and then you can get up to higher spots. And that's a really cool mechanic that I was like, this is really creative for the time. Like, they didn't do stuff like this in other games.
So my initial thought in looking up, some info about this game, my initial thoughts went to Zelda 2, because it reminded me of the look a little bit, but it seems like it plays so much better. And maybe Zelda 2 should have adopted something like this, and it would have been a much better game.
I really do think, because this does have that... It's got a weird sort of like Dark Zelda vibe to it. Like, there's like This game has a different vibe than most games that you play around this time. From the music is, at first the music is kind of off-putting because it doesn't feel like it fits, but it really kind of really grows on you, and it's very moody. And just the visuals in the game, like the graphics in this game are really good. Lots of colors and just cool everything in this game just looks good. And I don't know why I wasn't into it as a kid, because there's a lot of variety in this game from like the, you know, the different levels you go to, the different enemies that you fight, the different, you know, you have to go around the level collecting gems, because in order getting the gems and get the keys to open the doors, because you have to get like 100 gems in each level to go to the next part, because there's a knight protecting the door and you have to bribe him with 100 gems in order to let for him to let you through to the next level. And it's just stuff like that that it just makes the gameplay really kind of fun, because there's a lot of backtracking in it to get everything you need to get. And it feels open world, but it's not really, but it's way more open world than regular platformers at the time.
I really like the use of colors in the different environments. Like in what looks like a cave type area, like the deep purples that you see, and with the trees, mm-hmm. like the, you know, the deep browns and the greens, like it really pops more than you would think an NES era game would.
And Staff Sergeant Sketch brings up a good point. He says, he remembers not being able to get past the first level and having to reset the game, and then would be able to the next time. Perhaps it was just because he had no idea what he was doing. I think a lot of that is the reason why I didn't like it as a kid, but I do like it as an adult, because it's not linear. You know, you have to do a lot of backtracking. You have to do a lot of like jumping from platform to platform, you know, going in hidden areas and finding the hidden secrets and things like that throughout the level to get through it. It's, like I said, it's not linear. It's more like I kind of get a, almost like if Castlevania II, Simon's Quest, and Ghosts and Goblins sort of mashed together and made a good game out of those two, this would be it.
Yeah, graphic-wise, it reminds me a little bit more of a Ghosts and Goblins than a Castlevania, but I do see the kind of the elements that maybe were borrowed from that. But yeah. It makes for a potentially, you know, nice mashup. And I will admit, I have not heard of this game before you told me about it, but it looks really interesting.
It was one of those games that I feel like a lot of people had this game, but and I feel like all my friends had it, but I never was into it enough to get, you know, ask for it for Christmas or whatever. And it just, it's one of the things, like, I'm not really into the whole swords and sorcery thing. Like, I just wasn't into that at that time as a kid, and it didn't intrigue me. But now as I've gotten older and I've played games like, you know, Diablo and, you know, dungeon crawlers of that nature with the whole sword and sorcery type of feel to it, like to go back and play this is like, oh, this is, you can tell where those people got the inspiration for those games by playing games like this.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go back and check this out, because I was actually thinking at some point I'd like to go through and at least try to play through every game that Rare has developed, because really, I'm such a big fan
of
them.
You of all people, I think, would really enjoy this game. Once you kind of get into it and figure out, and I wouldn't necessarily say use a walkthrough at first, just kind of jump in and get a feel for it. And then it's not one of those games that's so huge it's going to take you hours to figure. It's not like the original Legend of Zelda, where you could spend hours and hours and hours in that game looking for stuff. The levels are relatively small, so there's not a whole lot of places you can go, but just finding all the secrets and all the things like that are really fun in this game.
I think that's why I'm surprised that I've never heard of it, because it looks like a game that I would enjoy. Because when I was a kid, I was into swords and sorcery and magic, partially because of Zelda.
Yeah. And I think this game kind of fits right in there with that whole Zelda genre. I think if you were super into Zelda and you, like me, were disappointed with Zelda 2, like, but you liked that kind of genre, like this was, I feel, is a much better game than Zelda 2. And I know I want to get hate for that, but I still, to this day, something about Zelda 2 just doesn't sit right with me. And this game just kind of streamlines that sort of not linear gameplay, but allow you to find like secrets, and you have to collect things, and you have to upgrade your armor and get new weapons. And some of the, I was trying to look up the heavy things like I said, the potion of levitation allowed you to float upwards, the dagger of throwing, which is cool because it gives you, every time you throw your sword, like you throw a dagger out that acts like a boomerang, and it gives you a longer range of, to hit something. The battle axe of Aegor, that are thrown at enemies and return like a boomerang. The feather of Featherfall that slows your falling speed, which you do a lot in this game because the platforming is a lot of going up and down and not sideways. The Wand of Wonder and Staff of Power that shoot out balls of ice and fire. Cloak of Darkness that makes you invisible to enemies. Boots of Lava Walk, that where you can walk. There's a lot of lava stages in this game that allows you to walk on lava. So it's got those RPG elements to it where you're going through and collecting, you know, all the things that, you know, like upgrades to your armor and things. Like it's an early version of that, but it's still fun nonetheless. It's like a, I wouldn't say a dungeon crawler, but it's a dungeon side scroller. Well, not even side scroller, like a dungeon platformer.
With all the weapons you were listing, I kind of got a Game of Thrones vibe.
Yeah.
As to how everything's named. Yeah, I want to check this game out. Like I love the cover art for it. Like it looks like, like a book, like the cover of a book you would see in a story. You'd be like, okay, I might be interested in reading that.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's something that would be right up my alley.
And I just remember at the time, you know, 89, 90, the early issue, you know, first couple of years of Nintendo Power, this game was always in like the top 10 or top 20 or whatever. You know, they would have that list of, you know, the top Nintendo games at the time. And this game was always up there. And I kind of feel like I cheated myself by not giving this game a real chance when I was a kid. But I feel like, you know, I appreciate it a lot more as an adult, especially for, you know, being a rare title. And it's a lot better than I feel like most people give it credit for, because you don't hear a lot about this game. And I feel like this game is a lot, deserves to be, you know, up there in one of the better Nintendo titles at the time. Even to this day.
I'm a little surprised at the reception of the game too, because Allgame, it gave it 4.5 stars, but the Games Machine only gave it 70%. Power Play gave it 68%. GameSpot gave it a 7.2 out of 10. And I feel like that's very average.
Yeah.
Which it sounds like to me, at least from your experience playing it, that it's above that.
Yeah, I feel it's way better than average. It's not a masterpiece by any means. It's not a Super Mario Brothers 3. It's not Legend of Zelda. But it's definitely in that kind of upper mid-range of really good NES titles.
Yeah, and the NES, and it's crazy to say this, but I know it's the console. Like, I'm not as familiar with, like, the more obscure titles of it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to add this to the list to go back and play. Like, I wish it was on, and I don't know if it is or not, but I feel like it should be on some kind of, like, rare collection or something along those lines. Like, yeah. It's some type of collection.
And there's so many games in the Wizards and Warriors, let's see, there. Now I forgot how many other sequels that came after this. Of course, Wizards and Warriors 2 was, Iron Sword was famous for having Fabio on the cover.
Yep.
And there were definitely other games that came afterwards, but I don't know, it kind of got abandoned because I feel like it just didn't really capture that huge market that they were looking for, and eventually it was just abandoned. But I feel like these games have a strong enough cult following. From what I've read the last, you know, week or so, like researching this game, that I feel like eventually Rare would put out like some sort of a compilation, of these titles. And I was reading right here that IGN listed Wizards and Warriors at number 56 on its top 100 NES games list.
So it's around average.
Yeah, it's just right there. But I mean, yeah. To be in the top 100 of, you know, 1,200 games is that's not bad at all.
True. Yeah, the last Wizards and Warriors game to come out was Wizards and Warriors 3 Visions of Power for in 1992.
Really? That was it? I thought there were several other sequels that came out. Because I thought they had kind of moved to computer only at some point.
Yeah, Wizards and Warriors 3 came out for the NES in March of 92. Huh. Yeah, it was the third and final installment in the Wizards and Warriors series.
Yeah, and Staff Sergeant Sketch, I never played the second one, but I do hear that it's slightly more playable than the first. And of course, he said maybe I just had a Nintendo Power issue to help me. And I think I had that same issue. Because I remember that being in there. And the reason I wanted to play this game is because I do want to go back and play Iron Sword as well. Because, I don't know, these games just kind of intrigued me. Something about these games just really intrigued me over the last, you know, several months or so. Because, I never played these. I did at different friends' houses, you know, like they had copy of it and I would play it a little bit at their house, but it never captured my attention as a kid. I think it holds up pretty damn well to be, you know, relatively early NES title. I mean, this thing came out in 87, roughly around the time of, you know, Castlevania and things like that. So I think it had a lot of tough competition for the genre that it was in.
Yeah, you think of the other titles that came out around that time, and it can be pretty tough to compete with that.
Yeah, because I mean, you had Metroid, you had Castlevania, like all the great games. Like 87 was a pretty solid year for Nintendo games, and to come out that same year and not be, you know, a mainline Nintendo title or, you know, something, you know, one of the huge Nintendo franchises, like it's going to be hard to get noticed at that time.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think out of 10, like it's not, like I said, it's not a fantastic, great game for the Nintendo. It's better than average. So I think it sits somewhere between it's maybe a 7.5, like a good average, above average Nintendo game.
I can respect that.
But I'm really interested for you to play it and see what you think about it, because I think you'll get a lot out of it as well. You'll see a lot of what has come since then got their seed from this game.
Yeah, no, it definitely intrigues me from, you know, the look and the gameplay and everything. It looks like something I would enjoy.
And that's going to bring us to the end of the episode. Just to remind everybody, next week we're going to have a guest next week. We're going to have Mr. Brian Dunaway from the Play Retro Show is going to be on next week. And we're going to be doing our top 5 beat-em-ups. And we've gotten a lot of lists in. So if you haven't sent in your list, please send them to us wherever you want to send them to us, really. But the best way to do it is just send them to us at nerdcaveretro@gmail.com. And Derek, tell us about the feature presentation.
So it's unofficially back. I did a mini episode this week to kind of talk about what you can expect from the show and everything. So you can go check that out on, it should be out on all major podcasting platforms now. And to give, and Mike Evelyn pointed this out too, if you subscribe to the old version of the show, you will need to subscribe to the new feed. I built a brand new feed, just starting fresh with the show. So you can find that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, it's on Google Podcasts, really the only platform it's not on, I know for sure, is Pandora, but it's on iHeartRadio. It's on TuneIn app, pretty much anywhere you can get your podcast. You can find it. It's also on YouTube. The show will officially launch a week from Monday, May 16th, live on YouTube at 8 p.m. Central Time. It will be live every week at that time. So the best way to keep up with the show is subscribe to the YouTube channel and follow me on social media at Feature Press Pod.
Fantastic. And go check us out, the Open Micers Podcast, where last week we did, for episode 100, we did a pop culture palette reunion with Mr. Wally Phelps and Miss Steffi Lou Who. And that was a really fun episode, so go check that out. And then this week's episode, we talked to Mr. Robbie Hennig and Jesse McCann from the Old Rob Podcast, which is one of the funniest new podcasts I've ever heard. So go check out the Old Rob Podcast wherever you get podcasts. And go check out Open Micers at Open Micers on Twitter and Instagram. So, Derek, I think that's just about it for this week. What do you say?
I think so.
Let's get out of here. If you'd like to email us, of course, at nerdcaveretro@gmail.com. We're at Facebook, facebook.com/nerdcaveretro. Of course, Instagram and Twitter at nerdcaveretro. And individually at jfunktastic, at Derek_diamond. For some reason, our merch store is down, and I had to email TeePublic to find out what's wrong. But when it's back up, it's ncrmerch.com. And our Patreon is patreon.com/nerdcaveretro, or as little as $1 a month. Keeps us alive and functioning, keeps the lights on, and you get access, early access, to the commentary tracks every single month, and anything extra I throw up on the Patreon feed. So head on over there, patreon.com/nerdcaveretro. And of course, leave a review wherever fine podcasts are given away for free. So Derek, please tell them what it's all about.
This is the way.
This is the way.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.